it's just all the data, and every piece of data I look at has a better than 50% chance of recession coming from that piece of data. And when you have 90% of your data is all signaling better than 50% chance of a recession, that's how I come up with my 90%.
Welcome back to View from Above, featuring John Berger. John, thank you for your time as always. Excited to see you. How have you been holding up? It's been an interesting few weeks. That seems to be the theme of the year. Every time we talk, I say it's been an interesting couple of weeks. It's been another couple of interesting weeks since we last talked.
Yeah, definitely it's been interesting. I'm holding up fine. The clients that we have, that I work with business coaching wise and fractional CFO wise, thankfully, all but one have been with me long enough that we've already established a lot of the guide rules, the framework, what I call framework for being able to make decisions. So really it's just more a matter of helping them stay on track and operate their decision-making within that framework, rather than being inspired to be a little bit more reactive, which is totally normal. So it's been pretty calm and just kind of moving forward. Definitely more work, because there's just more stuff going on, and we are having to bob and weave a little bit more. And it's not just the same old status quo every time we meet. It's like, well, what new thing has happened in the last 2 weeks that we need to go back and revisit some of the decisions we made and make sure that the framework says that we should stay with those, or maybe this is time we need to do a pivot or a bob and weave. So
I mentioned to you just a second ago, my esteemed co-host on the Intelligent Investment Show, subtle little cross-promotional plug there for the Wealth Partners Network. If you're watching this, it might be interested in seeing some other shows on the network, the Intelligent Investment Show with Matt Dahl. A couple of weeks ago or last week, he made the bold claim that Donald Trump may be the most powerful and influential human being that's ever walked the face of the earth. Now, we don't have to necessarily debate that on the show, but it is an interesting claim, and it's whether it's true or not, or wherever you fall on that, the man moves markets probably as much as any human being has before, because typically powerful people that can move markets, it used to be a rule, I think, in fact, that with the Fed, they were not allowed to communicate, but there were very strict criteria about when the Fed could communicate certain things. That was obviously in the pre-X, pre-Twitter days. Yeah. Nowadays, you send a tweet out and it moves markets. And April 8th, April 9th, Donald Trump makes the short announcement on tariffs, and the market moves $5.7 trillion in total global market capitalization in, 30 seconds. That's a big influence that the man has.
Yeah.
But then there's also ripple effects from that, because what he says is going to affect the bond market, it's going to affect the equity market, it's going to affect the global economy. That's a lot to digest if you're a business owner, to think of, that's a really big tail wagging the dog, or dog wagging the tail, whatever you want to, however you say that. So what are your thoughts on that? What does it mean? How much influence does he have? Does he have too much influence? And what does it mean to business owners at the end of the day? That's all that matters. We can't control how much he has, but we can control our inputs.
Yeah. So whether he's the most or he is in the top 0.005% of influencers, he definitely has influence. And that's the reality of it. Whether it's too much or too little, not for me to debate here. But I'm always about what's the data say and how are we going to respond to that? And the reality is, if you wish that he didn't have that influence and you operate your business hoping that he wouldn't have that influence, that's sticking your head in the sand. It's not going to happen. The reality is he has that influence. And when you accept that, then it comes down to, all right, so what do we do with that? Or how do we manage our way around all of that? And that's really where it becomes more important for business owners, especially any operator that is trying to run some kind of an enterprise, and that could be a business owner, it could be a CEO, it could be a CFO, you know, even a VP, right? To ignore the fact that that influence is there is basically to potentially put yourself in harm's way. But the challenge with that is that we really don't know what the next tweet's going to say. And I think that's the harsher reality that people really need to wrap their head around, is that he has that influence. He has the ability to change things, but we are sort of at the whim of one person with a heck of a lot of influence, potentially doing his own pivot as he feels is going to, you know, suit his needs as much as he wants them to. So that's the real challenge for all of us. And I think that it just kind of puts a very fine point on what we've talked about several times over the last several sessions of this podcast, is the importance of having a framework to manage that unpredictability, and to be able to respond to things that we don't even know we're going to have to respond to, because in reality, they're going to be there eventually, and we're going to have to respond to them. And having a framework is way more important than trying to figure out what are all the possibilities that could happen here, and this is what I'm going to do. Because guessing what Donald Trump's going to do or say or tweet or whatever, that's impossible. You can't.
I'm reminded of the scene from Apollo 13, which is a great movie, by the way, where
one of my favorites.
There's a scene there where Gene Kranz is arguing with the engineers, or he's talking with the engineers, and one side saying we can't do this because that'll blow up the ship, and the other saying we can't do this because I think it's when they're trying to decide if they're going to do a direct turnaround or if they're going to use the moon as a slingshot. Anyway, they're arguing about what to do, and Gene Kranz at some point says, "You're telling me what we have. I'm telling you what you're telling me what we need. I'm telling you what we have." And there's a big difference, right? A lot of times we may not like the situation. Or you may like the situation. It doesn't really matter. The fact is, you can't change it one way or the other. And I also thought, as you were saying, that, you know, I'm a golfer. I would love to hit a golf ball 320 yards, and I can plan my game plan or my strategy on a golf course around the fact that I hit it 320 yards. It doesn't change the fact that I do not hit it 320 yards. Yeah. And if you plan for the wrong scenarios, just because if you plan for what you hope will happen instead of what's likely to happen, it's not gonna get you very far. One particular area, and I know you said there's, before we started recording here, there's several, but one that I was just thinking about today, the stock market is its own beast, and that affects our 401k balances, it affects our savings, it affects our retirement. But one of the markets that has a key impact on business owners is the bond market, maybe as much or more than the stock market, because bond markets are going to dictate bank rates. And those are going to dictate what rates are going to be for business owners who do have to rely on some type of external capital to run their operations.
Sure.
And it's been a pretty volatile year in the bond market as well, which has an impact on investors, but it has a huge impact on business owners.
Well, massive, because as you talked about it, especially business owners that do need access to capital, because that capital dries up. And it's not just the rates. Although the rates tend to fall in line with this other part, but it is just credit availability, right? So if you remember back from the days of the Great Recession, and one of the things that happened in the Great Recession, and this is not so much for big business owners, but for small business owners as well, was as banks were trying to mop up their exposure, their risk exposure, the first thing that they did is that unused like home equity line, it's gone. It just got removed. And that was the one that surprised more people than I think anything in the Great Recession, especially you know, smaller mom and pops and residence owners as well, was the what they thought was a cushion that was there if they needed it, all of a sudden wasn't there. And credit availability is huge in a market and an economy like ours that relies heavily on credit availability. And that has its ripple effects too, right? So if credit's not available even to consumers, then those consumers back off, which means business backs off even more, which means your need for that capital may even increase. But if rates are going up or your credit availability is diminishing, you can get stuck between a rock and a hard place. So one of the things that we're talking with current clients about, business owners and CFOs and CEOs, is, you know, let's look at your need for credit and your dependence upon it and your ratios. If you're a little bit credit thirsty, a lot credit thirsty in the market that is really very likely to become credit diminished, credit availability diminished, that is another scenario you need to be thinking about and playing through, because nothing worse than, well, I have a payroll coming, I don't have the cash in the bank, and my line of credit just got yanked on me. Right? So that's just one more variable. And yes, when you have, especially when you see what we've seen in the last 2 to 3 weeks, the authority of the U.S. dollar as the default, you know, the currency, that reputation has been damaged. Has it been permanently damaged? Is it, are we irreconcilable at this point? I don't know that we're that far along, but it's definitely been damaged. And there's movement in that reserve currency status. There's movement in people, other countries wanting to invest in treasuries. There's movement in other countries wanting to, hold those debts that our companies here in the United States are relying on to operate their business. So big, little, small, it does, big, medium size or small, doesn't matter what size the bear is. The reality is that there's a lot of movement, and really being intelligent about how you're going to manage that movement and what is guaranteed or what you think is guaranteed may not be, and really assessing what the levers are you have to pull, that may be changing as well.
Yeah, and another element of that that I think of is, even if it even extends down to the consumer level, which you kind of touched on there, but it reminded me of my very first job out of college. Was before I was a financial advisor, I worked for a bank for about a year and a half in credit, and one of the really tough things that happened to a lot of consumers in the Great Recession was, it's such a spiraling effect. You take somebody who has three different credit card balances with $3,000 on three different cards, $9,000 of credit card debt, and they have total limits on those cards of $10,000 each. So they had $30,000 of available credit, $9,000 of debt. That's a 30% debt to availability ratio. And one of the key impacts or factors in your credit score is credit card utilization. How much of your credit limits are you using? Well, the economy gets a little tough. Guess what happens? Credit card companies start slashing your credit limits. So now your $10,000 card gets hacked down to $4,000. And if that happens across the board, your overall credit utilization goes from 30% to 75%. And what does that do? It lowers your credit score. So you say, okay, well, I'll just go and get another credit card because the economy is getting tough. I'm going to go get another credit card now. Yep. And you can't get it anymore because your credit score is bad. You did nothing. You didn't borrow any more money. You didn't miss a payment. You didn't default on anything. Nope. But the bank decided that you were less credit worthy now because they as a whole at the macro level contracted credit availability. And now guess what? Your emergency red button in case things really, really hit the fan just got a lot harder to use. And then what does that do? Because I said that's such a domino effect. What does that do? Well, that makes you spend even less because you've really got to tighten it up now. That hurts the economy, which hurts business owners, which hurts the stock market. And it becomes a self-fulfilling problem in a way. Yeah. And then it happens on the other side too. When things are good, we expand credit and everybody starts borrowing like crazy and your credit scores go up without you even necessarily paying anything down. So it swings both ways. But the business owner gets stuck in the crosshair of all of this stuff, right? They're affected by the consumer. They're affected by the equity markets. They're affected by the bond markets. They're affected by the economy as a whole. So no question in that. As often as the case, I go on little tirades that don't have a question at the end of them. But it does affect a lot more. It extends down to the consumer as well, which is part of our audience is going to be, well, business owners. They're business owners, but they're consumers as well. And it affects them on both
sides.
And
so are their employees, right? And business owners, while they don't employ the highest percentage of the they employ the most important percentage probably of employees, and it is a huge factor. So I have one of my favorite phrases of all time is, he who lives by the leverage sword dies by the leverage sword. And our country lives by the leverage sword, right? Things could get much better if we have probably done so in spades, especially since the Great Recession. We have credit contracted massively during the Great Recession, and we swore we're never going to do this again. And yet, through zero interest rate policies and QE and QE max and whatever, right? We basically did the exact opposite. We have expanded credit and credit utilization in this country to the point we are more leveraged than we've ever been. And companies are more leveraged than they've ever been. And the challenge with that is that when you prick that bear, you can go in the other direction really, really fast because of leverage. Leverage has a multiple effect. And if you're levered, if you're levered 3-1, that's not dramatic. But when you're levered 12-1 or 15-1 or, every 1% change here can be a 10 or 12% change there. And that is not insignificant, right? And I think that's one of the things, which means we're going to see a lot more volatility. And that's one of the things I've told all my clients, and whether they're investment management clients or they're business owner clients. Volatility, we are in a volatility regime, high volatility regime, and that means we're going to see more volatility. And yeah, I know the VIX is down in the 20s right now, but it's coming back. It will come back. We're going to have another pulse of this, partly because going back to the original topic, we have one person who has tremendous amounts of influence. And if he changes his mind on anything or tweets anything that's at all against what people think might be the next tweet, that leverage is going to re-show itself. And
it's like we said before too, not only do we have one character who has a lot of power, but let's face it, that character is a volatile character. I mean, somebody can make a lot of money if you come up with a Trump volatility index to go along with the stock market index, but I mean, he's gonna ruffle feathers by his very nature. And look, I'm not about to, on this show or any other show, voice my opinions of Trump one way or the other, because I want people to watch, and I know that if I voice my opinions, I will make half of the audience mad, and I'm not going to tell you which half that would be. You know what I mean? Somebody pointed out to me one time that I had a unique ability to state both sides of the coin without telling you which one I fall on, and Trump is like the ultimate challenge of that skill, right? But regardless of what you think of him, he is volatile, 100%.
And that's reality. He's volatile and he has influence.
Yeah. So I want to throw you a curveball here, and if you don't want to swing at it, that's totally fine. But speaking of crossovers, this has been a good theme for me, because Matt on the Intelligent Investment Show, he's pretty bullish on the economy. I have a sense from reading between the lines, that you're not quite as bullish. So just for the sake of actually showing both sides of the coin, are you a little bit on the concerned side economically? It sounded like a couple episodes ago you said something that kind of made me feel that way. Do you fall maybe a little bit more cautious?
Yeah, so I know that what is the current percentage is 45% of advisors believe that we'll be in a recession. The probability is 45% will be in a recession. To me, it's 95%. We'll be in a recession sometime in the next 3 to 6 months. I just, there's too many things that are going on. Is that going to be a horrible recession or a simple, easy one? Have no freaking clue. But I think the reality is, even at 45% chance, if you're a business owner, you better have that as one of your, what do I do if in that framework, right? Because ignoring that 45% probability is just basically, stubbing your nose at the giant wave that's coming at you, and it's right there, right? So yeah, it could go away, but it's right there. So I suspect. This is what I believe. Any business owner can actually not only survive a recession, but thrive in a recession if they know what they're doing. Any business owner can die in a market that sags but doesn't go and meet the technicalities of a recession. And we are definitely having a sagging economy. That's baked in the cake. We have a sagging economy. We have high volatility. How that results, whether it's the stock market brings the economy down, or the economy brings the stock market down, or neither of them bring each other down, but they both go down, or maybe they just kind of sag and take a breather or a break from what's been going on the last 12, 18 years. Okay, whatever that is. It's still something that has to be a reality, and you have to say we're not going to be humming at 4% growth rate. Sorry, just that would be almost a physical impossibility.
I'm almost positive, before I say this, that you won't be able to relate to this in San Luis Obispo, but in North Carolina, we'll get tornado warnings from time to time, mm-hmm. and you'll have your phone go off, and it gives that loud, obnoxious iPhone sound that it sounds like the old radios did with the National Weather Service.
Yep.
And, you know, sometimes I hear those things, and it's a thunderstorm warning, or it's a flash flood warning in some remote part, and it's not that big a deal. But if it's a tornado warning, I'm perking up to that, okay? Maybe it's because I grew up in the 90s when the movie Twister was popular and it scared the heck out of me, but I'm terrified of tornadoes. I'm perking up to that. But if you're a business owner, recession is sort of the warning equivalent of a tornado. If it happens, you better know what you're doing, and you better know where your safe spots are and how to take cover and all that kind of stuff. And I don't know about you, man, but if I hear a 45% chance of a tornado warning, I'm taking cover. Yeah. And if I'm a business owner and I even see a 45% chance of a recession, that's a really, when you're evaluating risk, you've got the likelihood sort of multiplied times the severity, right? So something that is a high severity problem with a low likelihood may not worry you that much. And something that's a high likelihood but low severity may not worry you that much. But if you start getting into the area of high severity, high likelihood, that's a problem. And a recession for a business owner is a recession is bad for a lot of people in a lot of different areas anyway, but business owners especially are right there, like I said, at that crosshair where they're not these big corporations who can survive a 50% hit, and that just means they're going to have to, you know, raise some debt, raise some equity, lay off some employees, and they'll survive it just fine. Some of these don't survive, to your point. Well, so I said it was a curveball. You didn't have to swing if you didn't want to. 90%, man, you came out swinging hard. You didn't mind swinging at that one at all. I applaud
no problem with that.
The boldness. But to a follow-up question that I had to that, though, is that you started the episode, you said something about what's the data say. So what is the data that leads you to say pretty boldly you think it's 90% that we're heading into some type of a recession?
Data coming from a lot of different places. Leading economic indicators definitely are stating that. And I put a fair amount of influence on that. Bond market is basically saying that, especially with the way it's approaching interest rates, and even how it's behaving relative to stock market and other things. We're looking at capital flows in and out of countries and out of companies. We're looking at, we were priced for perfection thanks to PE expansion. So we have PEs that are massively above the long-term historical averages, price earnings ratios. companies, markets, sectors, I don't care what you look at, they all are basically saying the same thing. PEs are at historic highs. And, you know, everything ebbs and flows, and the pendulum doesn't have to go past midway, but it will go back in the direction of that. And all the things that lead to those things changing and becoming less buoyant as they have been for the last several years will create, just tend to create their own cascading effects. So one thing leads to another, which leads to another. The brittleness that we have seen in the markets and in the economy as well over the last 2 to 3 quarters, all are pointing signals at saying, you know, there is something bubbling up underneath that is A, unhealthy, B, not predictable, but not something you can rely, unreliable, right? You can't rely on that catching you and saving you. And when you look at all of that data, I just go, it's like, well, I see that data. That puts it at, you know, that puts us at 30-40%. I look at bond market data and what the bond market is saying, and it's signaling big time that, you know, we are preparing for interest rates to and credit availability to go the opposite direction that's been going for a very, very long time. Even, you know, when you look at the GDP Now numbers, those are, you know, from the Fed, the Atlanta Fed, those are not looking good. It's just all the data, and every piece of data I look at has a better than 50% chance of recession coming from that piece of data. And when you have 90% of your data is all signaling better than 50% chance of a recession, that's how I come up with my 90%. It's like,
well, and specifically with the bond, you referenced the bond market a few times, and I can see a few different answers there. But what specifically about the bond market is concerned? Because I'm looking at, we had an inverted yield curve for a long time, and it finally uninverted very briefly.
Sort of, but not really. It's still a weird inversion right now. It's not one we see a whole lot of.
And we're toying around with reinverting, and again, maybe it depends on what part of the curve you're looking at, right? And I don't know, for listeners or watchers or viewers who may not know what we're talking about, an inverted yield curve is typically you're going to have shorter-term bonds. Shorter-term lending rates are going to be lower than longer-term lending rates, simply because if I'm lending you money for 20 years and versus 2 months, I'm going to expect a higher rate of return for lending that money for such a long period of time.
Or for a long period of time, right? That would be normal, right? So why? Right,
that's normal.
Why would an inverted yield curve is basically saying, the market is saying, I will lend you money on the short term and give you a higher rate of return on the short term than I will in the long term, because I see in the long term some issues coming up. And it's basically trying to predict where interest rates will be, you know, over that time period.
It is so completely backwards when you really get it broken down to like simple. All right, John, I need to borrow $5,000. Send me a check and I will pay you 10% interest and pay you back in 6 months. And you say, well, I don't need my money back in 6 months. I'll give you, you know, 5 years to pay me back, and you only have to pay me 3% interest. Well, which am I going to take? I'd much rather pay you 3% over the next 5 years than to pay you 10% for the next 6 months, right? But that's what happens in an inverted yield curve, is that credit or lenders are demanding a higher rate of return for short term than they would. I'll give you money for 10 years and right, won't charge you nearly as much as if I give it to you for 6 months. That is completely backwards. Right, so
there is,
that's a major risk red flag.
Holding that debt, and understand that the reason why, one of the reasons why debt, typically the yield curve is sloped the way it is because you increase the chance that the debt will be defaulted on with the time period between when you are, and I think that sort of informs it. So you want to be paid extra for that extra holding period. But cash is king in markets that don't do well. And that's one of the reasons why I think they're saying, you know, if you want to borrow for 3 months, I'll let you have the money, but I want that cash. I want to have access to that cash. And if you are borrowing it, I won't get it. I can't get it back. I can't ask for it back. Right. So you can't call the loan. There's a lot of that. So, you know, there's just been this talk in economics about, when the yield curve inverts, that predicts the next recession by, 3 months, 6 months? You know, everybody has their own number that they use for that. But the reality is, and the history is, when you start looking at it, it's not the yield curve inverting that predicts the recession. It's the yield curve uninverting that predicts recession, because then markets are saying there is risk for holding for a longer period of time. And we want to be paid for that holding risk. And that's usually the one that is the most challenging. And the market's trying to, again, predict where interest rates are going to be down the line. And
If we were at a stage on the Wealth Partners channel that we could do crossover events, I would love to have you and Matt on a crossover, because it's interesting that you both would agree, I think, on this one topic for sure, that the bond market is a little bit more intelligent than the stock market, I think.
Way more intelligent, yeah.
And when you've got the stock market saying one thing, he used the analogy, I loved it. It's kind of like two college roommates, and one's sort of the proverbial partier, and the other one is the geek that is always in touch with everything. And that's kind of the bond market, and the stock market sort of the party animal that cheats off the smart roommate. But the bond market is, for a lot of reasons that, you know, we don't have to get into on the show right now, but it's a little bit more sophisticated. It's got bigger money behind it and more cautious and deliberate money behind it. It's more calculated. And for that reason, it can be a much more accurate leading indicator, according to some people. I don't know if you would agree with that or not, but I think there's certainly that school of thought out there.
I don't disagree with that. And I think that actually part of the reason why that is, and it comes back to, is the bond market is leverage, right? And leverage is multiples. So it's much more important to get it right in the bond market, which is why the smartest brains have always been in the bond market. The most seasoned of all the analysts and all the decision makers with regards to markets in general have always been the smartest. The rocket scientists have always been on the bond side. Why? One, it's not as glamorous, but every decision is much more important because of leverage and because of duration, because of that exposure you have to time. You can say, oh, I pick great stocks. And yes, you make the multiples are good, but they go all over the place. And you're dealing with much different kind of volatility. There's the term the bond vigilantes, and they've been pretty quiet for a long, long time. That doesn't mean that they're stupid. Doesn't mean that they're marginalized. It just means we've not been in a place where they're going to have influence. But we saw it in the Great Recession. The stock market was responding to everything that the bond market had been saying for quite some time. And when the bond market finally just said, nope, this is it. And when credit dried up, it created havoc for everybody.
Well, and one of the reasons that that has to be the case is stupidly simple math here. But if I invest in two stocks and one goes to zero and the other one doubles in value, then I end up breaking even, right? Right. Well, when I'm investing in the bond market, if I miscalculate my credit risk and one of those bonds, I end up not getting any of my premium or my principal back. Well, when interest rates are 4%, how many years of a 4% rate of return do I have to earn on the other half of the portfolio to make up for the complete loss? You're much more likely to make up. Your winners are going to offset your losers much easier in the stock market than it is in the bond market. So you better be pretty doggone good at not finding losers in the bond market.
At least not committing to them. Maybe identifying the losers, right, but definitely not committing resources.
There you go.
To it. Yes, and that is true too. It's again, everybody, you know, going back into the ages, always the most intelligent people in finance have lived and breathed and made their successes in the bond market. And
yeah,
it's hugely important.
Yeah. Well, I just looked at the timer. We're a little long this time. We, you know, I said the word Donald Trump, and then we just roll. We don't have to even come up with topics beyond that. So enjoy the man as always. For viewers, listeners, you may visit John and learn more about John at AltusWealth.com. If you are a business owner, John is an excellent sounding board, a very rational mind in irrational times, I would say, is one of your major strengths. So I appreciate your time as always, and we'll see you here in a couple of weeks. And thank you for viewers, listeners. Thank you for your time. John, see you in a couple of weeks.
You bet.